And welcome to the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange conference call.
Today's topic is all about the OSGI JVM server and CICS. My name is Kathy Kuhn, and this session will give you the opportunity to speak to our panel of experts on a variety of subjects related to today's topic. Moving on to slide two. In today's session, we will introduce the panel of experts, followed by an introduction to the CICS transaction server, all about OSGI JVM servers and CICS topic. We will then answer the six questions that were submitted by the panel, followed by the four questions that were submitted by email. After that, we will open the lines for Q&A, and then we will summarize the highlights of our session. Slide three. At this time, I would like to pass control over to Ivan Hargraves to begin the introduction of our panel of experts. Ivan?
Okay, thank you, Kathy. I'm Ivan Hargraves. I work in the Hursley Lab in the UK. I've been the technical leader and the lead developer of the JVM server technology, Liberty Profiling Kix, pretty much since its inception. I was there when we started the first prototype, and I'm still hanging on now. So, with me, I have three other people. I'm going to hand over now to Dave to introduce himself.
Hi, it's Dave Roberts here. I've got quite a considerable amount of experience working on IBM mainframes. And the last 8 of those years, I've been working here at IBM in Hursley in the UK. I'm currently working on the Kix JVM server, Liberty Profile, WebSphere Liberty Profile integration into JVM server. I'll now hand you over to Shayla Robinson.
Hi, I'm Shayla Robinson. I work out of Research Triangle Park, and I work in CICS, CPSM Level 2 support. And over the years, I've done quite a bit with Kix and Java. And I will hand it over to Phil.
Hi, I'm Phil Wakelin. I work in IBM Hursley with Ivan and Dave. I work in the strategy and design team. I'm responsible for the Liberty JVM server and JVM server futures design and strategy. So I'll hand control back over to Shayla, who can start the topic introduction.
Okay. Slide four, please. So today during this session, we will be covering a set of questions on the topic all about OSGI JVM servers inside CICS. We'll be discussing how to set up an OSGI JVM server, the reason why you would need to migrate to the JVM server, moving applications to run on an OSGI JVM server, how you can improve the performance, automating deploying Java applications, how to troubleshoot Java applications, debugging the JVM server, ensuring the portability of applications, best practices for connecting to databases, and batch jobs in Kix JVM server. Slide five, please. So the first question is, how do you set up and configure a JVM server to run OSGI applications? Slide six, please. So there are four groups of parameters that get used for configuring a JVM server. The first set are the Kix SIP parameters, USS Home, and JVM Profile Dir. You specify JVM Profile Dir, which is where your JVM server profiles are located, and you set up the USS Home SIP parameter to specify where the Kix Unix System Services components are installed within USS. The second group of parameters are the LE runtime options, which specify the runtime options for controlling the processing of the LE enclave. We provide the default sample program, CFH-AXRO, which you can use to configure these options. The third parameter is the JVM resource definition. This is used to encapsulate the JVM. It controls the life cycle of the JVM server and the JVM. And this can be defined either using CETA or the Kix Explorer. The last set of options are within the JVM profile. Within the profile, you can specify the JVM server options. The first two that are required is the Java underscore home parameter and the work underscore dir parameter. The next set of configuration parameters that you can specify are the OSGI underscore bundles, where you can specify any third party, bundles that you would like to use, the OSGI_frameworks_timeout parameter, where you can specify the amount of time allowed for the OSGI framework to start up and initialize. You can also indicate the naming for the standard in, standard error, standard out, and the JVM trace files that will be created. As well, a PAR PI19204, which can be used for JES routing. You can specify JVM options, which are used to define the JVM command line options and any system properties you want to define. And you can also specify any Unix system services environment variables within the JVM profile. Slide 7, please. So as a bare minimum, in order to set up CICS, in order to run a JVM server, you must edit the kick startup JCL to add the library sdfjauth to the stepli concatenation. You must also include a JVM profile dirsit parameter to point to where your JVM server profile is located. You would then need to edit the JVM server profile to specify the java_home and the work_dir parameter. Make sure those are pointed correctly. And kick provides the sample JVM profile dfhosgi for that. You then need to create your JVM server resource definition using either CETA or the KIX Explorer, and you can then install and enable the JVM server into KIX. Note that the JVM does not get created until the JVM server is actually enabled. And at this point, you now have your JVM server up and running and ready to run your KIX Java applications. Slide 8, please, and I will hand it over to Ivan.
Okay, thank you, Sheila. Question 2 now. So why do I need to migrate from JVM pool to an OSGI JVM server? And on slide 9, I guess there are a number of reasons. The biggest is because we're going to remove JVM pool, or have removed JVM pool, in KIXTS version 5.1. And there are a number of reasons for this, one of which was to do with some internal interfaces we were using and some work that we needed to put in place to continue the support but weren't allowed to due to internal politics. So we had to look for a new model that didn't break these internal rules. And at the same time, we took the opportunity to put in a much more standard model of Java into KIX. And we recommend that you test out your applications in a JVM server at the 4.2 level before migrating straight from JVM pools to JVM server in 5.1. The JVM server itself gives a far better portability and better scalability than the JVM pools model. There are many KIX tasks can run in the same JVM, unlike in the pools model, so you're saving on a certain amount of storage and some startup and initialization costs compared to the JVM pool. At the same time, we chose to add in support for OSGI, and OSGI gave us some key advantages, one of which was to force developers to be very specific about their interfaces. You have to understand which Java packages your code will be consuming, and you also have to explicitly declare the Java packages that your code implements. And in this way, you have a very formal definition of the interfaces between your Java components. It keeps development much more manageable. Now, OSGI also brings with it a few other advantages. One of those is to support dynamic updates to your applications. So you can update your applications without having to restart the JVM. And you can also run multiple versions of your applications within the same JVM. So, for example, you could test out a newer version of something while still having the bulk of your code run against the existing known stable version. So on slide 10 now, we have the next question. And question 3 is, how do you migrate your existing Java applications from the class path to OSGI bundles? Slide 11, please. And slide 11 shows you the very simple case, and it assumes here that you have a Java project. That Java project is in Eclipse, and you will have the KIX Explorer SDK plugin in your Eclipse version. And what you can do is just a simple right click on your existing Java project brings up some built-in tools. And you can see the graphic on the slide shows the Convert to OSGI Bundle Project option. You may also see this as Convert to OSGI Plugin. An OSGI plugin and an OSGI bundle are essentially the same things. This allows the tooling and the runtime to scan your Java application and determine what your imports and exports are, and it will automatically create you a set of bundle headers in the manifest file of your jar. And these bundle headers will contain things like the symbolic name, which is the unique identifier, an initial version, and it will explicitly list the packages that your Kix bundle or Java project consumes and allow you to specify which packages you export. So once you have your OSGI bundle, we've gone one further with the JVM server in that we give you a development mechanism. So you can develop your Java code on the client without having the usual hassles of worrying how to get your code up to your mainframe. And as part of Kix Explorer, you have the ability to create a new Kix bundle project. I ought to point out at this point, don't get confused between Kix bundle and OSGI bundle. They are different things. And in this case, the Kix bundle can contain one or many OSGI bundles. And you can consider it as a transport mechanism or a container that allows you to transport your OSGI bundles up to ZFS ready for Kix. And it also allows you to manage the lifecycle of the applications within it. So once you've added these OSGI bundles as references to your Kix bundle, you can then use the right-click option, which is to export the Kix bundle to the ZOS Unix file system. And once it's on the Unix file system, then you're back in Kix. You can create a new definition, perhaps an RDO definition with CEDAR, or maybe a definition through the Kix Explorer again. But you create this Kix bundle definition, you point it at your location on ZFS that you've just uploaded your project to, and then you can install the Kix bundle. As part of that install process, Kix will scan through the Kix bundle, pick up any OSGI bundles that are in it, and install them into the OSGI framework inside your JVM server, and then they're ready to be run. So slide 12, please. There are a number of pitfalls with the migration, so I demonstrated the easy case on the last slide. It does get a little more complicated, particularly if you have third-party jars. And if the standard conversion techniques are too complex due to these third-party jar files, the first piece of advice we would say is to seek out the OSGI-compliant alternatives. And most standard libraries do offer the OSGI versions these days. If you can't get hold of OSGI-compliant versions, then the next step you might consider is to wrap some existing jar files in an OSGI bundle. And you can do this by placing them on the bundle class path, which is one of the bundle headers in the manifest of your bundle or jar file. There is an alternative. You can, of course, use the tooling to do effectively the same thing. And I've shown the file new other plugin from existing jar archives menu option. And you select a set of Java archives, and it will the tooling will do essentially the wrapping and turn it into a bundle for you. So some of the other issues to look out for are thread safety. So the biggest thing with thread safety, many customers have found that where previously they may have used static variables in a JVM that is long-lived and is reused between application calls, static variables are preserved and the value in them is preserved. And that means that people porting from JVM pool to JVM server have to ensure that they don't use static variables, or I should say that they use them in the correct way. You could, if you discover a problem with static variables, you could use the thread local concept in Java to ensure that each thread gets its own clean copy of a static variable. The other area of thread safety is obviously to ensure that any objects you share between threads have synchronized access to them, so that threads can't be reading and writing at the same time for important data. And this is just standard Java techniques of either using synchronized keyword on your methods or on critical code sections. So slide 13, please. One of the more common scenarios we encounter here are customers that say, I have a set of common libraries and they are shared between many applications. How do I install them only the once into the environment, perhaps rather than having to include a copy of these jar files or bundles in each and every of my applications? And the answer to that is by using the middleware bundle options. A middleware bundle option is an option in the JVM profile called OSGI_bundles, and you simply list the set of bundles that you wish to be installed at startup of the JVM server. And they remain there for the lifetime of the JVM and are accessible and available to all applications that then run in the JVM. And now on to probably the most complicated migration issue you may encounter, and that is where existing applications have made class loader requirements, and OSGI doesn't work very well with applications that wish to manipulate the class loader themselves. And we have provided an APAR in PI25045 that will help Kix to manage the applications class loader as well as the OSGI class loader. If you haven't got that APAR or wish to manually do this yourself, the general technique is to reset the thread context class loader around the application calls that you need to make, so around those third-party API calls. I gave a little example at the bottom of that slide that demonstrates some very simple code where you cache the existing class loader, set the thread context class loader for the application, make your call, and then switch it back again afterwards. Slide 14. So question 4 on slide 14 is, how do you tune a JVM server for better performance? Slide 15, please. And the first thing I would say is that we have given a set of standard defaults for both the JVM profile, which tunes your JVM, and the LE runtime options to tune the underlying language environment. And these defaults should cater for most cases to give a well-balanced general set of options. However, if you think you can tune better, or you have a particular application that might fall outside the general options, the first thing I would say is to run a typical Java workload and run a peak workload. And then from there, you can use the standard Kix processes to obtain the JVM server resource statistics. Now, I'm going to skip ahead to slide 16 briefly. And slide 16 shows a typical output from the JVM server statistics. You can see there are four groupings here. The first grouping, labeled JVM server resource, are about the resource itself and how it is configured. The next grouping, called thread information, is about the JVM server resource again, and it gives you the information such as the number of threads that are running, the number of times that a task has had to wait to get hold of an available thread, and the same sort of information for these internal system threads that we use. The third section perhaps will be more familiar to Java programmers. This is your the JVM heap information. The interesting field here is something called heap occupancy. And heap occupancy gives you a good idea of how much real storage or real memory your applications are taking up within that JVM. And it's the storage that's left after having done garbage collection. using this value, you can compare it to your maximum heap sizes and determine how close you are getting to hitting the heap limits, and as a result, how often garbage collection might happen. Fourth section is indeed about garbage collection. It shows you your garbage collection policy, and it tells you how many garbage collection events have happened and how much elapsed time on CPU has happened during those garbage collection events. And it's split into two areas in the statistics. This is in particular for the GenCon policy, which is the default policy we've chosen, which has essentially two areas. One nursery area, where small, short-lived, transient objects are stored, and then one longer-term area, where probably the bulk of your long-lived application objects will be stored. And it allows the garbage collector to run quite efficiently in the smaller nursery area and scoop up those small objects very quickly without scanning the entire heap. So back to slide 15 now. You can use something called the IBM Health Center, and you can connect that to your JVM server. It's an Eclipse-based tool, and it has a low runtime overhead. And as we saw with the statistics, you can get similar information from the underlying JVM through the Health Center. The Health Center will give you the information in more graphical formats, so you can look at the graph, the typical sawtooth graph of garbage collection happening. And if those peaks keep increasing with time, then you may have identified a potential memory leak in your application. The Health Center also offers other tools like the profiling tool, and this can help look at CPU hotspots within your application, so you can determine which methods are being run the most times and which ones you would target your tuning towards. So finally, on slide 15, we have the LE runtime options. And Shayla mentioned we provide a pre-configured set of options, pre-compiled, with what is our best attempt at a general tune. And this is for advanced tuning only. You can switch the report to yes and get out an LE runtime report after running a workload. And it may give you some pointers to some of the values you could consider changing or tuning for that particular workload. I would say exercise caution, because tuning for one workload can sometimes break the tuning for another workload, so you really have to read up around this subject before making any changes here. Slide 17. And I'm now going to hand over to Phil Wakeling for question 5.
Okay, so question 5. How do you automate the deployment of a Java application in an OSGI bundle into a production kick system? So let's have a look at chart 18. The chart 18 summarizes the key components that you will need to deploy and are created within the kick system. So you define a bundle resource and a program resource, and they're the two resources you need to define and deploy when you're installing a Java application into Kix. The bundle resource has one pertinent bit of information, which is the bundle directory, which is the ZFS location of the exported components containing the manifest and, importantly, the Java code. The program definition has two important references. It has the reference to the Java class, which refers to the service definition, and it names the JVM server in which the Java code is installed. So when the bundle is installed and then enabled, Kix creates a bundle parts for each OSGI bundle that's defined within the Kix bundle. So you get a bundle part of type OSGI bundle if you have just one Kix bundle. Along with that, you'll have an OSGI service for every Kix main class. So the Kix main class is essentially the service which your program refers to. So if you link to the program, you enter your OSGI bundle using the definition of the Kix main class. So the little diagram there about installed and resolved shows you the life cycle which the OSGI bundle itself goes through when the OSGI bundle is installed into the OSGI framework. Okay, so what do we need to take from this? How do you deploy your bundle resource into your KIC system along with your program definition? So the key artifact here is going to be the bundle, which needs to be enabled, because that is what creates the OSGI bundle in the OSGI framework. So let's have a look at slide 19. Simplified version of the OSGI bundle versioning process is, first of all, you export a bundle project from Eclipse with a new version of your OSGI bundle, and you deploy that to ZFS. So in the OSGI model, you would increase the version of your OSGI bundle project using the semantic versioning scheme in OSGI. So you might go from version 1.1 to version 1.2, and you're deploying a new version of your application. And then, of course, you deploy that to a new location in ZFS. That's fairly simple. So then how do we get that into KIX? So in KIX, you now need a bundle definition to refer to this ZFS location in its bundle.dir attribute. So you can create a new bundle definition in your CSD or update an existing bundle. And then you install that, and when you enable that bundle definition, the OSGI service named in there will become active as soon as the bundle is enabled. So here, it's good to mention the PTF for APAR PI24367. So this APAR smooths the installation process, so that at this point, if you have a duplicate version of the bundle, which we have, say 1.1 and 1.2, the new bundle will be active as soon as it's enabled at step 3. So I'd highly recommend installing this PTF for this APAR. Without the PTF, you would have to then disable the old duplicate bundle definition to promote that new bundle definition. Now, steps 4 or 5, you may want to disable and discard the old bundle definitions if you don't have the APAR applied in order to tidy up the resources in your KIX region. They're not strictly necessary if you have the PTF. So now let's have a look at slide 20. So slide 20 shows how you can automate this process. So say we want to automate deployment of a new Java application in OSGI bundle into a running KIX system without outage. We used to call this new copy. So it's the same as new copy. So at startup, you would install your bundle. We're calling it A0, and that would have an OSGI bundle part in it, version 1.0, and that will refer to its unique bundle directory in ZFS. Here we have bundle home /A/1.0. And now we have a patch. We want to deploy a patch. And so, first of all, we'd export that to ZFS to a new directory, A/1.m. So export your new bundle project. Then at step 2b, we would create a new bundle definition, A1, to refer to this location. Now, you can either create the bundle with in your CSD using CEDAR, or if you want to automate this, a much simpler way of doing it would be to use the create SBI command, create bundle, which you could drive from an automation script using a CPSM Rex interface, for instance, and just dynamically create the bundle resource, because we're not going to need this permanently. It's just a transient resource. So we create the bundle, and then we set the bundle enabled. Remember, as soon as it's enabled, the service becomes active. So once the service is active, all new link requests to that main class will now use your new code, and existing transactions that were running using the old code will continue to the end of their transaction life. Then in step 2D, you should inquire on the bundle. It would be enabled. If it's enabled, then you can set the old version of the bundle disabled and discard it if you want to clean up resources in your KIX system. As I say, that's an optional step if you have the PTF applied, which enables early activation of a duplicate OSGI bundles. So then in 2E, you would also need to update the CSD bundle definition for A0. So why do we need to do that? Well, if you're using a CSD with a group list, then you'll be installing items from the group list on a cold start. So the items you install on a cold start need to refer to the new location we exported at step 2A. So you'd need to update the bundle definition A0 to point to bundle home slash A slash 1.1 in this instance for the next cold start. And then, of course, if you have a new version of the patch, you repeat this process over and again. So a new style of process you can use to deploy new versions of your Java application. It's a very flexible process because it enables you to go forwards and backwards, and you can actually inquire on the actual OSGI bundle and service artifacts to see what versions are currently in use. Okay, so let's move on to slide 21. So over to Dave, slide 21.
Thanks, Phil. So, question 6. What are the common steps to troubleshoot JVM servers and Java applications? Move on to slide 22. I've split this into three things. The first one is the JVM server resource does not enable. The first place to look is the Kix logs. If you go to the message user, this is where the Kix messages are written. The example here shows that the JVM server has failed to enable and it has a reason code of JVM profile error. And you can see that the second message said it's disabled state. If you then move to the sysprint or the sysnnnn generated DD, this is where the JVM server startup messages will be found. So again, in this case, you can see that there's an exception, and it says an attempt to open the JVM profile has failed because there's no such file or directory. So that should be fairly simple to sort out. If you need to continue investigating, the next place to go is the JVM logs, which are on the Unix file system. These are configured using the JVM profile properties, workdir, standard error, JVM trace. By default, you'll find these in the home directory of the Kix region user ID. If there's nothing there that helps you, then you need to set Kix trace, enable Kix trace. If you set AP and SJ both to all, and then recheck your logs to see if there are any messages or exceptions available there. Move to slide 23, please. The next issue you may hit is that the application is not available. So again, start with the Kix logs and possibly the JVM logs. So if we look at the first message there, it says that there's been an exception, that no Kix main class services with the class name could be found, and it gives you an idea of why that is. Either the implementing bundle has not been enabled, or the manifest of the bundle does not contain a Kix main class entry point for this class. So let's investigate why this happened. Again, look in the message user log, and we can see that the install of the bundle failed, and it says that the bundle could not find the manifest in this case, wrong directory name. So we can go back and find out why we've configured it incorrectly. The second possible issue is that the Kix main class didn't get registered. If you have trace enabled, you should see the Kix main class is registered in the JVM trace log on the USS file directory, or you can look into the Kix Explorer and you can browse OSGI services for that Kix region, and it should list them there for you. We can move on to slide 24, please. Okay, now we assume that the application is available, but it doesn't work as expected. So what techniques can you use here? We go to the message user log because we've had an append, and we can see that the program has thrown an exception, in this case a null pointer exception, and it tells you the class name of the program that's failed. And we see the AJ05 append code for the program definition there. If we now go to the JVM trace or JVM error logs, you should see a stack trace, which explains and it gives you the offset in the Java program where the exception happened. And this, if you're a Java programmer, this should be quite familiar to you. What other techniques can you use to debug? Well, you can use EDF. That will show you all the JKIX API calls and the SQL calls in exactly the same way as a COBOL or PL1 application does. You can use the Java Interactive Debugger, which is available in Eclipse or the KIX Explorer SDK. You need to set a property in the JVM profile, and I'll put a link there to the documentation in the KIX Knowledge Center to point you in the right direction. If you set a breakpoint within your application, as you run it, you will get the application will stop in the Java code and you can debug it from there. We talked about OSGI bundle life cycles, or fielded rather. If you're having issues there, then and you understand what you're looking for, then you can use the OSGI console to look at bundles and services and see what is active and available. And there's a hint there as to the JVM server profile properties that you have to set. One last thing that I haven't put in the slide, and that is that you could take a dump and you could format the SGA domain, and that will give you some information about the JVM server, such as the JVM profile and other useful information. On slide 25, please. And I think we're back to Ivan now for this question 7.
Okay. Thank you, Dev. Question 7 says, how would it be possible to debug OSGI bundles on a single JVM in KIX by multiple developers? And the question was submitted by someone who said, as far as I know, the JVM in KIX supports only one debug session at a time. This, of course, leads to decreased efficiency of developers. Slide 26, please. And as I've said on the slide, the simple answer is you can't. The Java platform debug architecture doesn't support multiple clients attaching to a single JVM. So this is not a KIX-specific issue. This is a limitation with Java, you might say. And although we cannot solve this at this time, there are ways around it. And on slide 27, I have listed some of the ways you may get around this limitation. The first is the most obvious, where you would give each developer their own JVM server for debug purposes. If that's not possible, then you could consider looking at perhaps a mocking approach. This is where your application code would run locally in Eclipse on your own workstation. However, you would have to stub or mock the JKIX calls with some temporary local calls. There are existing frameworks for mocking like Mockito and EasyMock, and these can exist and may help you with achieving this task. Now, something that we can consider here in KIX and IBM is to give a remote connection to the JKIX API so that you can run and test your applications locally on your workstation and have the JKIX calls submitted to the back-end JVM server and return results to your workstation. That may allow development or multiple developers to use the same single JVM server in KIX. However, it is only a thought at this time. The capability doesn't exist, but it's something that if enough customers submit RFEs for, we would certainly consider looking at. So slide 28. Question 8 asks, how do we ensure portability of bundles, perhaps between the JVM in KIX or a JVM in WebSphere Application Server, particularly when these bundles would use KIX-specific API like JKIX? Are there any best practices and guidelines? Slide 29, please. Yes, there are some best practices. And in particular, you would encapsulate the KIX-specific API calls in perhaps a second OSGI bundle, and this bundle would implement a common interface. So in this scenario, your main bundle would call through to the KIX bundle through an interface, and you would have an implementation of that interface in each of your environments. So
So perhaps one implementing bundle in WAS, WebSphere Application Server, and one in KIX. In that way, you can get the right underlying code for the right environment. There is a second alternative I briefly mentioned on the slide, and that's to use bundle fragments. Bundle fragments were probably more well-known to be used where you have different operating systems and specific code that needs to be attached per operating system. The same concept can apply between platforms. So you could encapsulate the KIX API or the WAS API equivalent in a bundle fragment, and then when you're running in WAS or you're running in KIX, you would attach that fragment to the main bundle to supply the specific function. Slide 30 now. And I'm now going to hand over to Dave again.
Okay, question 9. What are the best practices to connect with database? What's the preferred approach, e.g. JDBC, JPA, Hibernate as an example, or perhaps SQLJ? If we could move on to slide 31, please. Quite simply, the JDBC is the preferred approach. This is the industry standard, and it's supported in the KIX JVM server. JPA will use JDBC under the covers anyway, so it's pretty much the same thing. SQLJ is supported, but it's becoming less popular. But one of the reasons for using it was performance, and that is less of an advantage nowadays, although we do understand that it does give you finer granularity of control over resources within DB2. Can we move on to slide 32, please? I think this one's for Phil.
Okay, thanks, Dave. So, question. Is it recommended to run the batch job in a KIX JVM server? If so, what should I pay special attention to? I'm planning to run a batch in a KIX JVM. So, slide 33, please. So, there's two very different ways of running batch jobs in a KIX JVM server. First of all, you can use the KIX TS feature pack for modern batch. You can use that in the version 4.2 onwards, and that enables you to run batch applications inside the KIX JVM server in parallel with existing KIX applications. So you can combine batch and online workloads within KIX. This requires an external job scheduler, which runs in a WebSphere application server system, which is used to control the submission of these batch jobs. So that's a new, very different way of running batch, enabling you to combine batch and online in a new way. Secondly, of course, you can run long-running tasks to process batch-style work in a KIX region. And, of course, you could do that in a KIX JVM server. And if so, then KIX standard best practices apply to this kind of workload. So perhaps key 3 points to bring out would be that you should use thread-safe APIs for efficiency. So if you're using non-thread-safe KIX API, then the application will need to switch to the QR whilst those KIX API calls are issued, whereas if you use thread-safe API calls, then the application can stay on OpenTCB. Secondly, use regular sync points. If you have a long-running application that's updating files or database tables, then if you have a lot of work done within a unit of work, then a rollback and recovery scenario can take a very long time unless you take regular sync points. And then perhaps a third point is to give priority to online transactions and or regions. So you can use transaction priorities, KIX transaction priorities, you can use T classes, and you can use WLM classification for KIX regions to give priority to your online work over your batch work. And that's about everything on the batch. So slide 34.
This is Kathy again. I'd like to thank the panel of experts for their answers to the pre-submitted questions. At this point, though, we'd like to move on to the live Q&A session. There is a question that's in the group chat that I will ask. The question is, what is the preferred JDBC connector, type 2 or 4?
Hello, Steve here. Type 2 is preferred because it uses the Kix DB2Con resource, and therefore the transaction, the task that's running uses DB2Con, and therefore the transaction is coordinated between Kix and DB2. If you use a Type 4 connection, then you're not going through that transactionality and you don't have the same unit of work.
And I would add that Type 2 performs better than Type 4 by some margin.
Yes, because Type 2, although if it's on a local machine, it doesn't have to actually go out onto the network and it is optimized, it's still going through a longer code path.
There is one more question in the group chat from David. We just started investigating Java to support the mobile feature pack. We find that CICS Section Server 5.1 does not support Java 7.1, only 7.0. Are there plans to allow running Java 7.1 in CICS TS 5.1?
Okay, so this is Phil here. So that's really interesting to hear you're looking at the mobile feature pack. The first point I'd make is that the mobile feature pack doesn't require Java 7.1. However, as you say, Kix TS 5.1 doesn't support Java 7.1 as yet, only supports Java 7. Now, Java 7 and 7.1 both support the same API. 7.1, however, has some runtime advancements in the JIT and the JRE to exploit, for instance, some new hardware instructions on the EC12. Are there any plans to support Java 7.1 in Kix TS version 5.1 as we do in version 5.2? It is something our service team are aware of. I would encourage you to raise an RFE as a requirement against us, because that really helps us prioritize that work. It is something that is potentially in our plans, but at the moment we haven't got any delivery date for that at the moment. So because the mobile feature pack doesn't require 7.1, then I think you can carry on with the mobile feature pack on version 7.
We have a question in queue. David, your line is open.
Basically, four questions. The first question is, how do you use the both GC and the JVM?
Okay, well, it's Ivan. I will start with the first question, which was, how do you enable verbose GC? And the answer is, to enable that, you would code the property in the JVM profile. So just as you would with a normal JVM, you use the same property but in the JVM profile of your JVM server. The second question
is FFDC. Where do you log the FFDC files?
Okay, so the FFDC is done primarily in Java as an exception, which will appear by default in the work directory on ZFS. And work directory you will have specified in your JVM profile. And so you will get those exception and stack traces. Now, additionally, you can turn on Kix trace, particularly the SJ and AP domains, which will affect some writing of output to those ZFS locations of some Kix. It looks like, well, I say Kix trace, it's not internal trace, it's an extra portion of Java trace, which our service team can read and understand. You will also have the Kix dump or Kix trace options available to trace portions of what may have happened, and so there will be some FFDC in these traditional Kix components as well.
Is there any OSGI IVP program available we can use to validate the installation?
Hello, world.
There isn't actually, I can't think of anything external, but there are some example programs in the Kix Explorer SDK, and there's a Hello World OSGI sample there that you can install as using a Kix bundle that will validate your configuration.
Yeah, I think probably another point to make is that the way the OSGI JVM server operates is quite different in a way to a regular JVM, and the very fact that your JVM server starts means that the OSHA framework's been loaded. It's got access to the JKIX API. And the very fact your bundle installs means that the bundle means that all the OSGI bundles within it have been resolved. So the very fact that you enable a JVM server and enable a bundle, it has verified the majority of your environment for you.
Both questions, when we share the both batch and online the same JVM, how do you assign the priority and make sure batch does not get ahead with the online request?
Okay, so I think that just boils down to standard KIX priority mechanisms. So you've got task priority and transaction classes. You could limit the number of batch transactions to a number and put them in a specific transaction class, and you can give them a priority so that in the KIX, a scheduler can give priority to online work if necessary when it's scheduling new tasks.
So does it mean that the batch will be associated with a particular transaction running under that transaction?
That's what we're saying, yes.
Okay, thank you.
There is another question in the group chat. This is from Egil. It says, are there any special considerations when running with Liberty Profile enabled in a JVM server compared to a vanilla OSGI?
Okay, well, the first thing I would point out is that they are different things. They are distinct in that the Liberty JVM server is intended to be running web workloads or workloads coming in from the web as web requests, whereas the OSGI JVM server is more KIX transaction started. So there's those obvious differences. Other differences you may see are that to include standard OSGI bundles in a Liberty or web application, you would most likely want to put them into something called an EBA, which is an enterprise bundle archive. They don't run standalone, and in KIX version 5.2, TS version 5.2, we prevent you from installing standard OSGI bundles directly into the Liberty web container. Another restriction I can think of is if you are using security with your Liberty JVM server, in KIX TS version 5.2, again, we rely on the WebSphere Angel process, for which there only needs to be one per LPAR, and a current restriction means you can only run one of these secure JVM servers, or secure Liberty JVM servers currently, where you can run many, multiple OSGI JVM servers otherwise.
That's per KIX region.
Per KIX region, yes. Thank you.
Okay. The next question comes from Bridget. You recommended using the same CICS bundler definition, dev, test, and prod by using Symlink. Do you have any samples to help us in that direction?
Okay, this is Phil. So, good question from Birgit. So, perhaps going back to slide 20, I think what we need to clarify is that when you move to a new version of a bundle in a running KIX system, you would use a new bundle definition. So you'd create a new bundle definition. So you could create that dynamically using the SPI, or you can create it using CEDAR and RDO. Now, that then enables you to install a new resource from the ZFS filing system and install that into your application. Symlinks are essentially a way in USS of creating a link from one location to, from many locations to a single file, and you can share that file from multiple symlinks. Now, a symlink can potentially be used in a bundle DIR definition, but just like a file, if you update the symlink, you're essentially updating the location of where the files are loaded from. So if you're updating the ZFS, you need to be sure that the files aren't in use at that point in time. And in Java, what that means is that you need to be sure that there's going to be no more loading of classes from that location. So you can only be sure that's the case when your Java transactions have finished running. So as long as you're sure your Java transactions aren't running and using that location anymore, you can use symlinks to update locations. So Birgit, does that answer your questions?
I'll wait for them to reply in the group chat. I don't see anything just yet. Actually, she says no. Would you like to elaborate why that didn't answer your question? Well, let's see. So it said no, but I don't see anything in here yet to elaborate on that. Let me go on to the next question. We'll come back to that one and give them a chance to write in there. But the next one comes from David. Does OSGI JVM cut any SMF 120 records?
Okay, I think we can answer that one with a simple no, it doesn't. Liberty is primarily distributed technology. It doesn't cut the WAS ZOS records. I'm unsure whether certain components of the ZOS distribution would cut those records, but we in KIX do not use those extra ZOS components. So under KIX, it doesn't cut 120 records.
How can I turn on JVM trace on the fly on each JVM component?
You can turn it on the fly in the same way you can with existing KIX components, so using the CETR transaction and setting the SJ and AP domain levels to be all. And that will switch the tracing on, and if you wish to switch it off again, you can turn those levels back down to anything below 2 or switch them off completely.
Yeah, so on that point, it's probably worth reiterating that the control is, as Ivan said, via the SJ and AP flags, and if you change the auxiliary tracing controls, that makes no effect because that's only tracing to the auxiliary trace data set. This is about tracing to the ZFS.
We do have details on the symlink question we had above. The reason that it did not answer the question was I'm thinking of the definition when you move them from one environment to the next. Today, we are pointing in a specific directory.
Okay, so I'm trying to think what this means. If you moved a KIX application from test production, you'd have a bundle definition for that, and you'd install the bundle definition in test, and that would point to a ZFS location. And then when you move it into production, you install the same bundle definition from the same CSD perhaps, or you'd migrate it across to your production CSD, and that then would refer to that same ZFS location. So I think the issue that's being referred to there is that unless your ZFS in test and production are common, i.e. they're shared or they have an identical structure, you will have an issue that you will need to update the bundle DIR in the bundle definition when you promote it from a test to production system. So you can use tools such as KIXCM to help with that transformation process. So there are third-party tools that will do attribute transformation when you promote things. Or the other alternative, I think, is just use a symlink. So you could have a location of my bundle version 1 in a test, and that is a symbolic link to another directory, version 1, where you could have deployed your code, and then you install the same resource into production that would report link to my bundle version 1, but that would, you could create a different symlink at that location that points to a different data set mounted in a different ZFS location for your production system, and then you wouldn't have to modify the bundle DIR attribute in your bundle. So I think that probably explained it. Birgit said yes. If not, then I'm sure if you drop me a line, we can have a further discussion.
David, your line is open, sir.
Okay, thank you. Yes, I want to get more detailed information about JVM trace turn a JVM trace on the fly. In the WAS area, we use MN console. to turn off, for example, if you want to trace a JDBC call. So does the OSGI JVM running in CI should support this?
In a Liberty JVM server, the same trace options are available to configure those Liberty components, such as JDBC and JNI, as they are in Liberty outside of KIX. So you can use the same specifications in your JVM profile initially. I believe you could set the system property on the fly from a piece of code that you write. However, KIX doesn't supply anything that will dynamically configure the trace for those components whilst the JVM is running.
Okay, so how about if I want to turn it off? You know, suppose I define a profile, turn it on, and when I bring up the CICS, then so I assume that's a command I can turn off, right, on the fly.
Again, the only option is for you to programmatically set the Liberty Trace components to off. That will work for the Liberty component. And if you want to switch off the KIX JVM and Java components, you would do that through KIX Trace and the CETR transaction, as discussed previously.
Okay, so basically customer needs to write a Java program to turn on or turn off the by invoke that program.
If you wish to do so on the fly, yes. Yeah. But we wouldn't usually expect to be debugging and switching trace on and off in production systems. But, of course, it is up to you if you choose to do that.
Is that all you need, David?
Yes. Thank you.
The next question from our web conference is from Rustam. Are there any plans to support JAX WS in JVM server in CICS, or what is the preferred way of exposing web services?
Okay, so that's a fairly easy question. We already support JAX WS in JVM server in KIX. You can use it in a variety of environments, depending on whether you have service requesters or providers. You can use it in a Liberty JVM server, and there's a JAX WS and JAXP component. We also have an Access 2 JVM server which supports JAX WS and also is part of the standard Java X support in the JVM. You can actually use it in a OSGI JVM if you just wanted to have a service requester, JAX WS calling out to a service provider. Have you got a specific scenario in mind for JAX WS, request or provider?
One last question that came in that we were going to take, and it says, JVM with Liberty is supposed to be used for web, but how integration to legacy COBOL code is done then? I mean, would it be possible to call Java app on Liberty using CICS Link?
So if you're in a web application deployed in a Liberty JVM server, you can use the JKIX API to call out to a KIX COBOL program or other non-Java program. However, if you want to get from a COBOL program into a Java web application, then the only way to do it today is to go out through the web, so do something like an execkix web send and send a request into the Liberty listener. However, this is a known requirement. This is something that we are looking at. So I'd encourage you, if this is a requirement, to raise this as a requirement, and we can further discuss this issue through the requirements process.
Well, thank you. So at that point, what I am going to do is I'm going to pass it on to slide 36 and pass control back to Phil to summarize our session today. Phil?
Okay, thanks very much, Kathy. So I think today's talk was very interesting. It was really interesting to see the wide variety of questions, and I thank very much Ivan and Dave and Shayla for going through the details of the JVM server. I think we've had great coverage of everything from setting up JVM, problem determination, deployment, tuning, and some really interesting questions to top it all off. So thanks very much.
Yeah, that was very interesting. I'd like to thank everyone that participated in the Q&A session. I also would like to thank our speakers. Guys did a great job. I appreciate your time, Ivan, Dave, Shayla, and Phil. We did an awesome job. So at this time, we are going to close the session. You all have a great day.